Good afternoon, meeting the House Labor and Commerce Committee is called to order at 4:40 PM, Wednesday, February 25th. Members present, Representative Copman, Davidson, Ellis, and Donnelly. Today we'll be hearing HB 108 relating to aquatic farming. And we're teleconferencing to Anchorage, Valdez, Juneau, and Petersburg. Petersburg will be listen only. Before we get started, I'd like to alert the committee members to a new proposed committee substitute. And dated today, it's in your packets. And Representative Ellis is the prime sponsor, will briefly explain the differences between this proposed CS and CS the committee adopted last week for the purposes of discussion. Representative Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to say before we start out that I appreciate you bringing this bill back before the committee. This is our second time to hear the legislation. And I just wanted to say that there's a worldwide phenomenon going on, and it's called aquatic farming. And this legislation that I've brought forward is just an attempt to clarify the statutory standing of this industry that has not yet created itself, but that has, at least here in Alaska, but that has in about 13 other countries in the world. People involved in aquatic farming of various species, some that are more controversial than others here in Alaska at least, and people involved in meeting the market demand for cultured seafood in the United States. I'm very much committed, and I'm glad you are too, to a real open hearing process, because there are a number of issues to consider. And I know that a number of them will be addressed in resources, but some of them should be considered, or properly considered, here in the Labor and Commerce Committee. So I appreciate this opportunity. In terms of the committee substitute that's before us, there is one change from the legislation that was originally before the committee. This proposed committee substitute has eliminated Section 3 at the request of the Department of Environmental Conservation. We were duplicating language in Section 3 relating to AS 03.05.020, subsection A, and the language is there before you. So that's the comparison of the two pieces of legislation. I don't think there's any controversial aspect to that, and I would move the committee substitute.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, committee substitute is now before us.
I would also note, Mr. Chairman, that there is a proposed amendment from the committee that's in members' packets that we can take up now or after we've heard testimony, whichever you prefer.
I think it'd be advisable to take the amendment up now so that people along the way can testify, will be aware of it, and know that it's in. It's either been incorporated or not as a committee substitute.
If members could take up the amendment, it's changing page 11 after line 17, inserting a new bill section to read that the statute is amended by adding a new subsection to read, a land use or tidelands permit issued under this section for aquatic farming or related hatchery operations under AS 08.06 may be issued only to a resident or to a corporation licensed to do business in the state. And I should mention that this amendment was prepared by legal counsel of legislative affairs. As we know, local hire provisions or local benefit provisions are sometimes controversial. This was one that they drafted and feel comfortable with, so I think it's a good one.
I'd like to know for the record that Representative Furness has joined us. Representative Furness.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have a question to Representative Ellis having to do with the amendment. As I recall, the other day I asked a question concerning the investment cycle in the industry in order to set this up, and one of the response to that was the capital most likely would come from out of state, as I recall. Am I confusing the issues? Was that on the same thing?
Representative Furness, I believe there was testimony that there would be both capital from in-state and out-of-state that would be used to capitalize new ventures in this area. Foreign investment is a definite possibility.
And again, one of my main concerns is that if we are looking for out-of-state investors to come in and be a major part of being able to set up the industry in the state of Alaska doesn't seem reasonable to restrict it in this manner, particularly restrict it so tight in statute when we were trying to invite foreign capital being non-Alaska residents to participate in it. So with that, I think we need to think about this just a little bit more, and if they're going to do it, then capital really has no nationality. Money is money, and to get the industry going, we need to invite people in to spend it. If we limit them by virtue of them having to be a resident, except we may be defeating the purpose. And this is a little bit different than, say, a local hire when they're looking for money. But that's my concern with the amendment. And perhaps it would have on the table, rather than vote on it now, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'd ask that we at least get some responses to that. Put that in mind.
I appreciate your comments, Representative Furness. Through the chair, if I could respond to that. I don't believe that we'll find that this language is so restrictive as to preclude foreign capitalization or joining with Alaska to joint ventures to capitalize new projects in aquatic farming. So I don't think this is very tight language. I do think it's very warranted given the what some call the colonial nature in the past, the not so distant past, in terms of Alaskan fisheries benefit going to people other than Alaskans, and that's still a fact of life that we live with today. It's the Alaskanization of the fishery is continuing, and of course we all support that. But we wanted to go into in clarifying the statutory standing of an aquatic farming industry in Alaska, one that I would hope would be market driven. And of course, this legislation calls for no subsidy or no direct state support. I'm hoping that the benefit will accrue to Alaskans, but I recognize the need for foreign capital investment to sort of jumpstart the industry and ensure the Alaskans that begin to compete in this industry, if the legislature feels that this should move forward, that they do so with up-to-date equipment, plant and equipment, so that they can compete successfully in international markets. So I don't believe that the amendment is so restrictive as to preclude foreign capital.
Representative Furness, Chair might point out that foreign corporations can be licensed to do business in Alaska. So a foreign corporation that desired one of these use permits could come to Alaska, license themselves under our laws, and thus seek a permit through the permit process.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're making a good point. I was looking more to the need for the corporation to be incorporated in the state of Alaska. But licensing means basically they would hold a business license.
That you register with the Department of Commerce to do business in Alaska.
Right. I guess with that I would remove my objection. I don't think they need to require them specifically to be a corporate entity within the state. Okay, I remove my objection.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I just want to point out very clearly that it is a goal of this legislation to ensure Alaskan ownership of these ventures. We certainly don't want to discourage foreign capitalization, but Alaskans are going to be the owners, the permit holders, and the prime beneficiaries of year-round employment and the economic benefits of such operations. So I want to make that very clear.
Thank you, Representative Ellis. We have a motion before us to incorporate Amendment Number 1 into the committee substitute. Are there any objections? No objections, and Amendment Number 1 is incorporated in the committee substitute. It's already previously been adopted. Well, that being done, I'd like to take some testimony from the remote sites, and I understand that we have some people standing by in Cordova wishing to testify.
Including the salmon farming for these areas. I reckon recognize the mariculture and the salmon farming as an opportunity to expand the economic activity in some of the coastal communities in the state, and have personally been down to British Columbia and visited some farms, and also over the past couple of years have seen the Plum Island farm operations in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Having looked at these farms, it appears to me that it will be important that the legislation and the regulations for developing the farms are strict so that they control any potential for disease, and also so that the smolt and the eggs are of good integrity when they're entered into the pens. Otherwise, I might suggest that to accomplish this, maybe the smolt or the eggs, for instance, would come from the nonprofit hatcheries or from the state hatcheries as an opportunity there for them to generate additional revenue for their other enhancement efforts for the wild fisheries. As an opportunity for commercial fishermen who have fishing ventures, this might be an additional opportunity for them to expand their fishing business by having the farm and a couple, three workers maybe year-round, and gaining additional revenue from the sale of those fish while they're not otherwise catching wild salmon. So I speak in support of the Senate bill and to include salmon farming. Thank you.
Yes, Cordova, could you just go ahead and have everyone who wishes to testify proceed up to the mic and order.
Hi, hello. My name is Dan Bilderback, and I'm a resident of Cordova. I was born and raised in the commercial fishery here. I've got about 18 years experience on my own and about 10 years experience as a family member. The issue as I see it's mariculture versus salmon farming portion of mariculture. I'd like to just address the salmon farming, the shellfish and such, I think is probably going to be a good thing. The salmon farming is the real hot issue here. I have two concerns. I'm not so afraid of the change that this is going to bring around, as long as it's addressed properly down the legislature, if you take a look at it. The two concerns that I have are, the first one's the social economic impact it's going to have on the existing industry, i.e. my fishing operation, the communities that depend on it, and the whole infrastructure, the whole commercial fishing, salmon commercial fishing infrastructure. The second concern I have, which I haven't heard addressed too much, is the existing funding of those departments that will manage this, mostly the Fred Division, Department of Environmental Control, DEC. First off, the ADF and GD has taken about a 30% cut since 1986. As the funding gets cut back, so do the programs. They will basically be the lead department that follows this up. My concern is there's hardly enough resources in there to manage the commercial fisheries right now without taking a load of the salmon farming up, research, development, disease control, etc. I've got a question that might hit home. For you that have businesses, you took a 30% cut in your operations. How would that affect your gross income? And what I'm trying to do is compare gross income directly related to the gross seafood value to the state of Alaska. Again, my two concerns are the social economic impact on the existing industry, and two, the impact by taking up those resources in the state to manage the thing that are used right now currently to manage my fishery. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, my name's Tabor Ashman. I live at 6 Mile Copper River Highway, and I'm a fisherman here, and I've been for 12 years, and I wish to appeal to the logic in priorities facing our legislature and follow Alaskans' legislation allowing mariculture to benefit Alaska, and Alaskans will require a fiscal note in the millions of dollars. The physical note must cover adequate personnel for filing procedures, planning review committees to ensure mariculture farms cohere to the requirements set forth, increase fish and game personnel to oversee operations and perform biological tests for disease and impact to the environment. Currently, our fish and game and fish and wildlife protection agencies have been cut back to the extent as not to allow full utilization of Alaska's wild stocks. As a result of these cutbacks, a state study shows that a loss in revenue of $4.1 million to Alaskans' income and 130 directly related jobs will be lost. Investment by the state in Alaska's fisheries is monies well invested and will be returned many fold in jobs and income to Alaskans. I am asking our legislature and Alaskans to proceed cautiously in mariculture programs. A study, the downfalls and the problems in countries like Norway and British Columbia have occurred. Safeguard the tidelands for future generations of Alaskans. Alaska is very limited in its funding abilities. We are all feeling the drastic cuts in the state budgets straight across the board. Before we pass legislation allowing mariculture, let's first have regulations and procedures to protect our natural resources and current industries. Second, have funding required to initiate essential studies, increase in agencies and personnel to oversee. And third, most important of all, is that the mariculture is for Alaska and its people and not at their expense. Thank you.
Paul Patrick. Come on up. Here. Come on up. Come on up. Are you able to hear us clearly in
Juneau? Yes, we can hear you fine. Please state your name and who you represent and your address and proceed.
Yeah, my name is Paul Saunders. I'm a commercial fisherman in Cordova. I've been living here about 12 years. I'm not against mariculture, so to speak, but I don't want to see them trying to go ahead on this salmon thing too fast without first checking it out. I think it would be good to get into some of the clams and things like that. New markets, we already seem to have plenty of markets, or we're able to get rid of I don't want to see our markets getting flooded with pen-raised fish. The fish we have here are good quality, and we as fishermen are trying to make the quality better for our futures. I don't think the fish and game can manage the with the cuts they've had this year, that they'd be able to manage the fish farming if they got into it. I guess that's all I have to say.
Yes, my name is Jamie Ross. I'm a resident of Cordova. I've been involved in several salmon fisheries throughout Alaska and some bottom dragging and whatnot. I think my concern as a commercial salmon fisherman, as well as many of the others who have expressed their feelings here today, is that I think we need some kind of a separation in this mariculture bill between aquaculture, as in shellfish, and seaweed-type growth, Macrocystis kelp and whatnot growth, versus salmon farming. I'm more than happy to support any kind of mariculture in the form of shellfish, kelp, and whatnot, which can be handled on a small scale basis and could help supplement many local communities such as Cordova and other communities in Southeast Alaska. But salmon farming, I think if you look at the cases of Norway, Washington, Oregon, and British Columbia, is a very expensive operation. And oftentimes requires the money that big corporations such as Weyerhaeuser and such need to put in. To look to try to have small communities and small operations front that kind of money, I think is unrealistic, and you're going to have a lot of big corporations stepping $50 off of a good thing and taking the money away from our salmon fisheries. I think you saw this summer where a single sockeye salmon in Bristol Bay was worth more than a barrel of oil, and the tremendous amount of dollar value that the salmon fisheries of Alaska have for the state. So I really think this is pretty holy ground to tread on, and considering the longevity of the salmon fisheries and the number of Alaskans involved, I think you should consider some kind of a separation between the mariculture bill in a form of one side being shellfish and kelp type mariculture, and then having a separate issue address the salmon. Proceed cautiously on that account. Thank you very much.
Anybody else?
Yeah. Yeah, my name is Jeff Van Dyke. I'm a commercial fisherman here in Cordova, and I just like to kind of reiterate what the last three or four people have said in regards to salmon farming. I'd like to see that part of the bill proceed rather cautiously, being that there's a lot of things that can go wrong there. And I think that we have here in Alaska all the salmon streams we need to produce good fish, and I'd like to see us work with the wild stock that we have and possibly proceed with that end of it, and leave this fish farming or whatever they're calling it to the people that don't, to the areas that can't produce the fish. We can produce all kinds of fish here if we manage it correctly, and I like to see that part of the business to stay in the wild stocks. As far as mariculture goes, I'm all for mariculture in terms of raising oysters and scallops and kelp and stuff like that, but I'm not for fish in raised salmon. Okay. Bye.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Junior McCune, Vice President of Cordova District Fishermen's United. I'm testifying on their behalf. First of all, I'd like to say Cordova District United supports early control and development of shellfish and plant mariculture. However, we'd like to see a socioeconomic study be done before this bill is introduced or passed. And at this time, it makes no sense to cut the funding for the state hatcheries, the management of the commercial fisheries, and the enforcement division to start a new industry, which will require $1 million to get started. We are harvesting 130 million salmon per year and continuing to build our future salmon runs to attain greater harvest. Virtually, we are the fish farmers of Alaska. We have made a big commitment to the state of Alaska by building new hatcheries, paying assessments, upgrading fishing vessels, and putting our better quality salmon out all the time. CFU is concerned that the coastline wild stocks, traditional fishing grounds, and enhancement programs are protected before a fishing farm bill is passed. PISWAC, which is our current enhancement program, is ocean ranching is the biggest investment in the state of Alaska, and the state should keep funding the enhancement programs and not trade off for other programs. It has been suggested that fish farming might be started out of the P&P funds. Commercial fishing is always and has been the major employer in Alaska, where fish farming will only employ a few. Some of the foreign companies, such in Canada, have started fish farming because their own countries has passed legislation making the regulations tough to fish farm there, and also protecting their own local communities. We have made our choice to protect the wild stocks and enhance the salmon runs in the state of Alaska. We need to keep investing our money to compete on the world market by freezing, labeling, and storing our fish products in the state to be distributed all year long. So at this time, we urge you to take no action on legislation and development of fish farming mariculture until all concerned groups and communities have a chance to respond to the impacts of fish farming. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm a resident of Cordova, Alaska. My
756 Cordova, Alaska. I'm a commercial fisherman, been in the industry for 15 years. I have a problem with the spill in the salmon farming part of it. We have a high-quality summer run salmon that we harvest here, and it would be in direct competition with a pen-raised fish. And I just really would like you to use caution in putting higher problems into our marketing situation than we have now. And also the problem of capitalization in salmon farming is it takes an immense amount of capital to start a salmon farm. Small independent businessmen like myself would be virtually squeezed out. Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe this is our last person.
Thank you, Cordova.
Yes, my name is Bob Anderson. I'm 48 years old, born and raised in Cordova, Alaska, commercial fisherman. My background is 8 years with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and 6 years with the Seafood Processing Company, leading that company as president. I in general endorse what my predecessors have testified to here, in particular Dan Villavette's testimony with one addition. I can see the need for having the technology available if at some time in the future it's deemed that it's needed. And through careful research and study, with that in mind, I would have no objection if some of the existing private nonprofits were allowed to do this on an experimental basis with some sort of a sunset provision in there, so the technology is available and you have it available down the road. But right now, we don't know what effect it would have on the existing users, the effects on the markets of the existing Alaska seafood products, in particular salmon. Thank you.
Cordova, was that your last testifier?
I believe that's all we have to testify at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Cordova. Valdez, do you have people there that would like to testify?
Just one moment.
Yes, hello, I'm Paul McCollum in Valdez here, and I've been raising salmon for 13 years, and I'm kind of on the other end of the thing as far as from the fisherman's point of view, but my main comments would be pertaining to the, I'm in favor of this legislation in general, but I would like to see a little bit more control built in and possibly a direct review process of the appropriate regional associations, the regional planning teams or whatever that would have more of a direct connection in the review process rather than just the Commissioner of Fish and Game to help assure area fishermen that if some kind of a problem area is going to come up or something that might impact severely the marketing or harvest management or whatever in the area, that the regional planning team or the regional association would have some kind of a direct input and possibly some authority in the decision-making process on the issuance or denials of the permits. And I'd also like to see a priority set up to Alaskan fishermen's groups, whether it be cooperatives with even if they had to get larger corporate backing or something. I'd hate to see this just as one of the fellows mentioned, solely be available to because of the, he's right there on the capital, because of the capital requirements, and if this bill doesn't actually, if Alaska doesn't set up a real good loan program or something, it's strictly going to bias the thing to large corporations, and I'd like to see that steered away from by setting up so that especially outside, out-of-state corporations could only be financers, so to speak, and that the fishermen, Alaskan fishermen or PNP holders or whatever would have first rights at getting a corporation set up and, you know, seeking that kind of financing. But those were my main concerns there, and I just hate to see this thing blow up and have. I think it's something we need to push forward on, but I at the same time hate to see big megabucks corporations come in here without any regard to what results might take place for the rest of us. So that's pretty much all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Are there additional witnesses from Valdez?
Yes, this minute.
Yeah, this is Jason Wells. I have two problems with the bill as it's written. The first being that the permit issued under the 806, I don't see any verbiage in there that would keep that permit from going to an out-of-state organization. Secondly, I have a problem over the potential competition for the spatial competition for the farms as opposed to the traditional hunter type fisheries, and I'd like to see verbiage in there to resolve conflict there.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Are there additional people who wish to testify in Valdez?
I had a question for the last one.
This is the moderator. There is no one else here. Thank you.
Representative Ellis has a question of the last Valdez witness.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't understand. Did you mean competition in terms of air cargo space, or exactly what kind of friction were you referring to?
No, that's for fishing ground. Some of the traditional fishing areas could also be used as farm areas, and I think that would be disastrous to the hunter fleet. How on that?
Thank you.
That concludes testimony from Valdez. I'd like to go to the Anchorage site this time.
This is the Anchorage moderator. The first person to testify is coming forward.
Thank you.
My name is Thomas Pease. I'm 23 years old. I was born and raised in Alaska. I've commercial fished for the past 6 years. I've worked as a deckhand in both the Bristol Bay and Cook Inlet salmon fisheries as longline for halibut. I'm here today to voice my support for House Bill 108, the mariculture bill. As a young Alaskan, I seek employment in a field that will provide me with security and a sense of permanence. More specific, commercial fisherman of 6 years, I have reached the point where I wish to obtain my own commercial fishing operation, yet prohibitively high startup costs prevent me from doing so. The limited entry system has created an economic barrier that prevents many Alaskans like myself from participating in the salmon fishing industry in an owner-operator capacity. It requires anywhere from $100,000 to $500,000 to break into today's salmon fishery at a successful level. Over half of this startup cost derives from the exorbitant value placed on limited entry permits. I do not wish to be indebted to the state for the next 30 years. Traditionally, Alaskan fishermen have embodied the symbol of independence. In the past, they have prided themselves on being their own bosses, on making a living from Alaska's waters. Recently, however, the economic barriers connected with limited entry have created an exclusive fishery that precludes many Alaskans, both white and native, from participating in a traditional livelihood. Young, aspiring commercial fishermen have been barred access to a natural resource that is the common property of all Alaskans. Currently, over 20% of all limited entry salmon permits are held by non-residents. Additionally, most fish processing plants are owned and operated by Seattle-based firms. Obviously, with such a high percentage of non-resident fishermen and processors, much of the revenue generated by Alaska's salmon fishing industry leaves the state. Alaska's commercial salmon fishery no longer offers an alluring sense of independence. Since going limited entry, the salmon industry has transformed into an economically exclusive enterprise. For me and many like me, the commercial salmon fishery is a dead end. A second problem that plagues Alaska's salmon fisheries is a short but intense fishing season during which time huge volumes of salmon must be harvested and processed in a matter of weeks. High volumes of fish result in a poor quality product. The fish are thrown about, are walked upon, and in some instances remain aboard tenders for as long as 48 hours without being processed or refrigerated. Despite precautionary measures taken in transporting and processing this product, salmon are severely bruised by seine nets and gill nets before they're even removed from the water. Because of poor quality, 97% of Alaska salmon are sold on the frozen and canned market. A mere 3% of the Alaska salmon are sold on the fresh market. Alaska's fresh salmon market is represented by a handful of southeast troll fishermen whose low-volume fishery enables them to maintain a high standard of quality. As a result, they are rewarded with a sale price that is as much as four times the price of salmon destined for the canned market. Fish farms will produce a similar premium product and will cater to the same fresh market. Only fish farms will be able to supply fresh fish on a year-round basis. Southeast troll fishermen contend that fish farming in Alaska will undermine their markets. Such is not the case. The southeast troll fishery cannot possibly meet the rapidly growing demand for fresh salmon.
Excuse me, sir. Could you bring your remarks to a conclusion? We're really trying to get everybody's testimony in. We're going to have to try to limit folks to 3 minutes.
Okay. Let me just read my conclusion. Fish farming can bolster Alaska's pressed economy. It can provide new opportunity for stranded commercial fishermen like me. More opportunity, or more importantly, the mariculture industry can directly employ thousands of Alaskans and can indirectly employ thousands more in the fields of engineering, construction, transportation, and marketing. Governor Cooper, in his State of the State address, stressed the need for Alaska to break away from its dependence on oil. He emphasized the need to diversify Alaska's economy to ensure fiscal strength in the future. The mariculture industry provides one such opportunity to diversify. Alaska, with its clean waters and limitless coastline, is ideally suited to support a multi-million-dollar mariculture industry. The time to act is now. As legislators and fellow Alaskans, I urge you to support House Bill 108. Mariculture in Alaska can pick up where oil left off by providing high-quality fresh seafood that can be marketed worldwide and throughout the year. Together, Alaska's fish farmers and commercial fishermen can develop international markets that will propel us to the forefront of world salmon production and will give new dimensions to Alaska's proud title of the salmon capital of the world.
Representative Ellis has a comment.
I'd just like to solicit any written comments that anyone at the teleconference sites has. We've received a number of pieces of information from different groups and individuals, and any of you that would like to follow up with written testimony, if I could solicit that on behalf of the committee, we'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Anchorage, could we have the next witness?
Yes, my name is Lynn Gabriel, and my firm, Graf Martin Company, recently joined with Oceans Development and Arthur Young and Company to form a consortium called Arctic Seas Development Group. The purpose of the group is to advance the development of Alaska's fisheries and marine industries. We believe that the development of mariculture provides an opportunity for the state to diversify its seafood industry and to create resident employment. I'd like to address some of the comments on the socioeconomic impacts of mariculture. I think it's important that we emphasize in the education process that mariculture products, including pen-reared salmon, compete in very different markets from other commercially caught and processed seafood products. As we penetrate new markets and introduce the consumer to other types of Alaskan seafood products, all Alaskan seafood, including the commercially caught and processed products, will reap spin-off benefits by virtue of free advertising, so to speak. Mariculture operations will also require full-time, year-round labor force. Not all regions will be suitable for mariculture operations, but where it is feasible, it can provide a much-needed expansion and stabilization in their employment. For some communities where traditional fisheries are declining, little or no other job opportunities exist, and outside operators are taking over new, developing fisheries, for example, in groundfish, mariculture can be a very bright spot. The current laws right now do permit forms of aquatic farming, mussel farming, oyster farming, etc., but we need legislation that recognizes the potential importance of the entire industry, and can establish mechanisms for handling conflicts and concerns before they become major problems. To separate out salmon farming right now would mean that we would be going back to a system of reacting rather than acting on issues, and that, I believe, is one of the major reasons why we have so little control of our fishery resource today. I believe that HB 108 does provide a framework which will allow us to act rather than react, and I'm working right now with members of my group, Arctic Seas Development Group, and an ad hoc committee formed to draft some language for the legislation that might help in terms of creating mariculture councils, modeled on the regional aquaculture associations and funded in the same way, so that they also will be funded with private funds from mariculture operators in much the same way that commercial fishermen now are assessed for the aquaculture associations. And this in itself would help reduce some of the fiscal note attached to this bill that has been a concern of so many of the other people testifying here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, my name is Thorne W. Ferguson, Jr. I'm from Ferguson Construction. We're a small family-owned business and are native Alaskans, originally from Southeast Alaska. We've been studying mariculture for approximately 6 years. We visited various sites in Washington State, Hawaii, and British Columbia, in addition to consulting with NOAA's Northwest Alaska Fisheries Center at Manchester, Washington, and Juneau. Our contacts include many people in the private sector, including John Lindbergh, a NOAA specialist in the field. We have purchased land and are in the process of getting the necessary permits. This has been a long and drawn out and expensive process due to the lack of any permitting regulations or guidelines. Our feeling is that Alaska must get involved in mariculture before we get so far behind it would be impossible to catch up or compete economically. Alaska should be a leader in this new industry, since it is one of the few areas in the United States that is ideal for mariculture projects. With the increase in imported salmon from Norway and other parts of the world, it is imperative that legislation move forward to help accommodate private companies and individuals in the industry. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, my name is Tim Terrell. I lived in Cordova for 6 years. I derived my income from commercial fishing. I currently live in Anchorage. I have two mariculture operations. Right now I do a herring roe and kelp, and I have an oyster operation. I would like to say, first of all, I'm pro-mariculture as it relates to shellfish and kelp. However, I cannot support this legislation as it is written, since it includes fish farming as so broad in its scope. There is no doubt that the mariculture is here to stay and sure to grow in its importance and participation in the state of Alaska. The state must recognize this fact and do its best to help. However, more specific legislation is required to separate shellfish growing from fish farming. Oysters and blue mussels farming do not compete with existing fisheries and are owned by individuals as opposed to large-scale fish farms owned by corporations. I feel mariculture is an important resource to be developed but not exploited. And any legislation that is written must be carefully worded and thoroughly examined before being passed. Let's not lump all mariculture into one area. We are headed in the right direction. We just need to be more careful about where we are going. Let's not be hasty in deciding the fate of this important potential renewable resource. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
My name is John Payne. I've lived in Alaska for about 25 years, fished commercially on and off over the last 10 years. I currently own 4 retail stores in Anchorage. I'm plugged into the business world here. I'd like to make 3 points, if I may. With a fishing business background and a business background and a processing background, I think our economy is in a rather serious slump. I think it's time that we take advantage of every opportunity we can to bring into the state money and provide jobs. Economists indicate that it will be a minimum of 4 years before the pendulum even begins to swing back the other way, back to the oil days.
aquaculture, farming, and ranching, and so forth, will, within a very short period of time, 3, 4, 5 years, will be producing at the same capacity as our current logging industry. There's millions of dollars and hundreds and thousands of jobs, I think, are desperately needed. From an economic standpoint, we cannot afford to pass up this opportunity. I'm speaking from a resident of Alaska concerned for our welfare, not just my own. Second point pivots around the supply and demand concept. Seafood is becoming more and more popular, primarily due to its affordability and its tremendous health benefits. The world is currently maxed out on its seafood production curve. It cannot just crank out more fish through natural biology. It is imminent, I stress the word imminent, that man will begin to start creating seafood just as he learned to cultivate and create vegetables and other sources of food. My point is lucid and concise. If we don't do it, someone else will, and we will be the ones with the ox-driven carts while our neighbors are using tractors. My third point I'd like to make, I'd rather not see something occur which raped our economy during the pipeline, and that was hiring all kinds of people in different companies from out of state to come up here, take the jobs, the wealth, and turn around and split the country. I think that the legislation needs to be very, very careful on this point, and as far as setting up contracts or whatever is necessary to ensure that the jobs go first to the Alaskans and the company opportunities, the corporation opportunities, the owners get first shot somehow of you know, collecting most of the benefits. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Don Brugman. I'm the Vice President and General Manager of Northern Air Cargo, based in Anchorage. Our company's been in business for 31 years. I'd like to address this issue from a little different aspect. We're the largest all-cargo airline in the state and the principal transporter of seafood, salmon mostly, by air. It's a very up and down business. For nine months of the year, we haul no seafood, and for 3 months, we are very, very busy. This causes us a great deal of build-up expense getting ready for that 3 months. What we would like to see is some sort of industry develop where we had year-round activity in flying seafood, particularly in Southeast. We've long wanted to expand our operation in the Southeast. Sitka, for example, make an ideal hub for us. But we can only find traffic, backhaul traffic, seafood traffic, for 3 months. So something like this could be developed where for the 9 months where there was not a natural or wild harvest that could be used to keep the industries, aviation in my case, busy, and some way we would not like to see the impact of the natural business we do in 3 months, principally in Western Alaska, harmed by this. But there's I have taken the time to investigate this as far as going to Norway and looking and examining and visiting their fish farming operations and their aviation, the effects of aviation in Norway. The legislature is currently considering a plan to market the Anchorage International Airport, which right now has airplanes landing and fueling that are bringing seafood from Norway that have been farmed this way year-round. So I think one of the important aspects of this is the year-round implications in terms of the industry, particularly our industry. Thank you.
This is the Anchorage moderator. We have no one else to testify.
Thank you, Anchorage. We'll proceed with our meeting here then. Does that conclude the teleconference?
Is there anyone else at any site who wishes to testify?
Petersburg's listening at the moment.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much, everyone along the teleconference line. Thank you for your testimony. All right, we've received a testimony from members of local people. Rich Davis. Is Rich Davis in the audience? Davis, could you state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Rich Davis. I'm a commercial salmon fisherman, and I represent the deep concerns and views of individuals I've spoken with regarding fish farming in Alaska.
Could you have a seat?
Sure.
We're totally off the teleconference now, so any members don't have to worry about the microphone.
Each of the people I've spoke with, some of them fishermen, some not, asked me to tell you of their opposition to fish farming in our state. They agree with your desire to promote mussel, shellfish, and aquatic plant farming. We see little chance of economic impact and are all for it as long as no hazards are posed to our delicate coastal marine environment. There's no blossom waiting to open the minute fish farming is turned loose in Alaska. If you lawmakers give this industry a green light, we can only guess at its chance of getting off the ground. Economic conditions are already stacking against fish farming in our state. You must consider the cost of fish and farming equipment, transportation cost, cost and availability of feed, Alaska's distance from the market, and the imminent overabundance of pen-raised fish bound for market in 1990. No one can say the market will even accept the forecasted glut of pen-raised fish headed for the consumers. An overabundance of salmon spells lower prices for the entire salmon industry, fishermen included. Don't forget this. A flood of information is before you regarding fish farming. One piece states the concerns of Alaska's commercial salmon fishermen may be somewhat unwarranted. There's no authority in this statement, only the author's opinion. Some proponents of fish farming legislation have played down and tried to cover up the imminent economic impact of farm fish on our commercial salmon fisheries. They admit wild salmon prices could be affected by increased pen-raised fish production. The salmon fishermen are sure that prices for their product will be reduced if fish farming is allowed and encouraged to take root here. As elected representatives, you have the responsibility to act on the concerns of the people you represent, not to make decisions that adversely impact them. If you encourage this new industry and it sinks, out the window goes money spent by our state for regulation, enforcement, licensing and management, effort and loss of money that you lawmakers know we can't risk wasting. This state spent years and millions building, managing and promoting Alaska's wild, natural and renewable salmon resource. Nearly 45,000 people worked in Alaska's $414 million 1986 commercial salmon harvest. It's estimated better than half of these people are Alaskan residents. Remember also their dependent families. You legislators can't ignore the concerns and desires of that great segment of our population. If the fishermen of this state say that they're facing crippling economic impact, then you better do all you can to protect their industry. There's a chance that our commercial salmon industry could be economically displaced with your vote on this legislation. We're warning you not to take that risk. Don't take a gamble that may further reduce Alaska's struggling economy. You want no part in undermining our commercial salmon industry. Stand up for Alaska's fishing industry. Prohibit fish farming until the predicted pen-raised fish glut passes and the economic and environmental consequences are facts, not suggestions and conjecture. You'll be called dedicated leaders and be respected by us all. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Thank you.
Is this Greg Fisk?
Couldn't read your hand over here.
Could you state your name and who you represent for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Greg Fisk. I'm here representing the Alaska Trollers Association. I believe that another respondent here today referred to trollers as a handful of Southeast Alaska fishermen. Well, it's over 900 power trollers and a couple of thousand hand trollers, and their crew and the people they support, that hardly amounts to a handful. What I'd like to do is read into the record the executive summary of the full testimony, which Mr. Krieger tried to give to you the other day, but was short on time. We've given you the text, but I'd like to read into the record the executive summary.
Can you show me how long that is, sir?
One page.
Just one page?
Yes.
Okay, we'll let you do that. Usually it's a really good idea if you give us this stuff in advance. If it's in writing, we can read it, and it's really redundant to read it over again to us. But
okay, well,
go ahead. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
The Alaska Trollers Association believes that passage of HB 108 and companion bill SB 106, act relating to aquatic farming in their present form, would be detrimental to the Alaska salmon industry and not in the best interest of the state. ATA generally supports aquaculture and believes that there are many opportunities for Alaskans in various aquaculture developments. However, we specifically oppose those aspects of these companion measures aimed at permitting the pen rearing of salmon in Alaska. Alaska produces some 43% of the world harvest of salmon. The pen rearing industry, spearheaded and dominated by foreign interests and backed by their government subsidy programs, is in direct competition with our salmon industry. This applies not just to king and coho salmon, but to all fresh and fresh frozen product forms. Encouraging those interests to invest in and control pen rearing in Alaska is clearly not in the interest of our industry and will jeopardize the enormous private and public investments already made in our wild and hatchery stocks. We cannot control the actions of other nations, but we need not actively contribute to the market competition facing our own industry. We are also extremely concerned about the possible biological impacts on our wild stocks. While the spread of an extremely virulent infection from pen to wild stocks may be of a low order of probability, the potential for major damage to wild stock does exist. With so much at stake, is pen rearing worth the risk? Pen rearing will produce chronic habitat problems local to the rearing sites and will compete for release sites with our existing enhancement programs and may physically displace existing fishery activity, as has been the case with log transfer dumps. Proponents' assertions notwithstanding, pen rearing will divert increasingly scarce state government resources from existing fishery management programs. Fiscal impacts have not been addressed in these bills. ADF&G, DEC, DNR, DCED, and revenue programs will be affected. We contend that proponents are exaggerating the potential economic benefits of salmon farming in Alaska. Without strict controls, which are not contemplated by these bills, pen rearing operations will not be small Alaska-owned businesses. They will be large corporate operations utilizing foreign technology and funded and controlled by foreign interests. The few Alaska jobs they will provide will be at the lower end of the technical and pay scales of these operations. To the extent that Alaskans are involved, either as investors in foreign-dominated ventures or as independents, their position will be precarious. This industry is headed for a major shakeout worldwide, and small late entrants will be the most vulnerable. In sum, pen rearing threatens our existing industry and will not be the bonanza that proponents claim. Alaska's support for aquaculture should be in those areas where we can become the technological and market leaders. Let's not get on a bandwagon which is about to run out of gas. I'd also like to read to you something which I don't believe you have before you. It's a copy of a letter that was addressed to Mr. Roger Painter and copied to me. Roger, of course, is the executive director of the Alaska Mariculture Association. I'll read relevant portions of this brief letter. It's from Fishnet Alaska, which is a division of Sea Lease Corporation, which is the profit arm of the Southeast Alaska Community Action Program. As you know, CCAP is very interested in rural development, which is one of the things that salmon farming has been heralded as supporting. Relevant portions read this. Dear Roger, I just finished going through in-depth your information packet and have some very serious conversations with my colleagues and our executive director about its content. Much as it pains me to say so, Roger, we have been forced to draw the conclusion that we are philosophically at odds with you on the issue of pen-raising salmon in Alaska. The potential danger to our wild stocks through both pollution and genetic adulteration is far too great for us to countenance. Similarly, the threat to both the way of life and the livelihood of our Alaskan trollers and gillnetters, many of whom are our constituents, is clear and present. They are already at terrible disadvantage in attempting to compete with foreign pen-reared stocks. They don't need any further competition from domestic producers. They do go on to state, however, that they strongly support other efforts to introduce shellfish, crustacean, and kelp farming. I'll limit my comments to that. I think that many of the other respondents have spoken to the potential dangers for our own industry. I think this needs to be very careful about protecting all the Alaska industry we already have.
Any questions to the witness from members of the committee?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bob Blake.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Blake. I'm president of the United Fishermen of Alaska, president of the Cordova District Fishermen United, and I'm on the executive board of the Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation, all three of which I signed up to testify for. I did put in your packets written testimony or written facts from all three entities. I know that you haven't had an opportunity to read them because I brought them in about a half an hour before the committee meeting, but I would certainly hope that you have an opportunity to before you pass or proceed in passing this legislation out of this committee. Jerry McCune was on the teleconference and spoke of the CDF News position, so I won't go into that. I'll try to condense the United Fishermen of Alaska's position as best I can. The United Fishermen of Alaska passed a resolution earlier this month, and I'd like to read it in that into the record. It reads, whereas in 1985, and I stress that, 1985, the United Fishermen of Alaska requested the state of Alaska to perform a thorough study of the biological, economic, and sociological problems and potentials of salmon tenure in Alaska, but this study has not been undertaken. And whereas the UFA supports the careful and controlled development of shellfish and plant mariculture, and whereas the development of salmon farming concept of mariculture will adversely affect the fishermen and the most successful hatchery and enhancement program in North America by 1, reallocating state funds and services, 2, competing with markets for wild salmon, 3, preventing water and land use of traditional fishing, hatchery enhancement, smolt rearing, and site release or release sites, and 4, increasing the potential disease contamination of the wild stock, and whereas no realistic fiscal note has been produced to identify the cost of the state incurred by management of the proposed activities, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Directors of the United Fishermen of Alaska urges the state of Alaska to take no action on legislation and development of salmon farming mariculture until such time as the aforementioned issues of concern are addressed through private and public forums. That's signed 2687. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to go over just touch on a couple of the topics that are included in both of these presentations. One of our major concerns is where do the smolt of the eggs come from? We definitely are in avid, negative, and wild feelings about importing Atlantic salmon. The Atlantic salmon has had a history of disease, and the problems associated with importing them are just way too risky to think of bear. In regards to the eggs of the smolt,
Excuse me, Mr. Blake, I have a question for a member of the committee. Representative Ellis?
I don't know how quite to say this, except that the bill expressly prohibits the importation of smolt or eggs.
Well, we want to make sure that is in.
Yeah, it says it right there in the bill.
Okay, I read the bill today and I missed it again. As far as eggs and smolt that are available at this time, we are very concerned about where you're going to get them. In southeast here, they still haven't been able to produce enough Chinook eggs and salmon to meet the treaty requirements. And every fish that comes back to southeast is utilized by the commercial fishing industry, the sport fishing industry, the subsistence fishermen, or they have to go to escape. And looking at this bill, which is part of, I have some recommendation on the back that we would really like you to consider or toward the back. There's, I think, 11 changes that we recommend making in that bill and changing mays to shalls or shalls to may. Because this bill is designed, in our opinion, to force the Department of Fish and Game to supply eggs. And the way it's written, it doesn't say if there's a surplus, it says they shall. And I think you should take that into very serious consideration before you pass that out of the committee. Most of these changes we feel are necessary, and we would certainly really appreciate it if the committee take a look at that. Because we can't understand how the legislature would have any sincere feelings about taking from an existing industry or robbing from an existing industry in order to start another industry that would be conflicting with it, and just for the basic stock that it utilizes. We're not quite sure what the legislature is trying to do with this legislation. You know, are we trying to create a cottage industry, a mom-and-pop industry, or are we trying to develop an environment for multinational investors to come in here, to naturally put their money in here, hire a few local residents. Still, they'll be hiring most of their own people. Their technicians will all come with them and go away with the profits if there aren't. They'll bring in their equipment. They'll bring in their feed or their own feed plants, whatever. We just don't see that it's going to benefit Alaska residents that much. And the risk of disrupting the existing fishing industry is what you really have to consider when you're putting this package together. Again, we have no problem with shellfish mariculture. Individuals can get involved in shellfish mariculture. It doesn't take that much money. It's definitely a mom and pop operation and a supplement to a lot of incomes for a lot of people in all walks of life. And just touching on, without reading this, I just want to make one remark about private nonprofit aquaculture in Alaska. It was intentionally developed as private nonprofit and not private for-profit. The intent of the aquaculture legislation was to supplement the resource of the common property fishery, for the commercial fishermen, for the sport fishermen, for the subsistence fishermen, for the personal use fishermen, for every resident of the state of Alaska that was desirous of using it, and not for just a few private, profit-motivated people. Pen-reared salmon is, of course, private, profit-motivated. And it brings to mind some, in fact, Rick Lauber mentioned it to me the other day. He said, and it's not that I shouldn't use his name, because it's not necessarily what he intended, but he brought it to my mind. One of the hottest issues for statehood was to get rid of the fish traps, because they were owned and operated by large private companies. And we wonder if, in fact, is this exactly what we're doing here, reinstating fish traps? We think it is. Thank you very much.
Representative Ellis?
Mr. Blake, I appreciate the, and having had a chance to review your suggested changes here at the end of your letter, the chairman and members of the committee, United Fishermen of Alaska. So I'll take a look at those and review them and see if some or most of those can't be accommodated. You sounded very convinced about what you think the socioeconomic impacts will be. And some studies have been done. Have you all performed one to convince you of what those impacts will be? Because maybe we can share back and forth some of that statistical information.
Chairman, please. No, we haven't. We requested the governor's office 2 years ago in February at our annual UFA board meeting, and we were promised by the governor to take care of the situation, to provide for the funding for socioeconomic impact and the biological impact, to do this study before this issue came to a point that it's at now, where the governor's office provided funding to various and sundry studies, but they did not put together a conclusive study that hits it all. For example, the Bible that everybody's toting and quoting from, that the House Research Agency did, we have some serious misgivings about portions of that, especially the pen-reared salmon portion. When you look at the contributors to that, that are listed in the footnotes, that they're all proponents of pen-reared salmon, and yet that office is only two doors down from the Alaska Trollers Association office, and nobody ever bothered to go in there and ask anyone how they felt or what was going on or what their attitude toward it was or what information they could provide. It's very biased, and unfortunately, most of the things that have come out appear to be very biased towards pen-reared salmon. If you look in that thing, there's one page on negative impacts. It doesn't say anything about negative impacts. And there's negative impacts with anything in this world.
Mr. Blake, do you know if the governor considered that House Research Report to fulfill that promise of producing information? Or?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm not sure who commissioned that.
Okay. Could I ask if I know you probably couldn't speak here today to whether the organizations you represent would be interested, but what do you think the prospect is of those organizations who are most feel like they will be most impacted, putting forward some of the money, the state putting forward some of the money. Frankly, I'm disappointed that the governor didn't carry through with that promise and get the study that you all requested. A lot of information has been compiled, and I think we're making use of that as we go along. It may not be wholly adequate, but what would your feeling be about participation in coming up with some of this information that you all feel we need before we proceed?
I think that most of the groups would be willing to put some money in. And there, like you said, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of information kicking around Canada. I've been compiling some of it, and I think I've given Representative Davison about an inch and a half of paper. Not all of it's good, but I mean, it really shouldn't cost that much to put this stuff together. But it is a real shame with the hundreds of millions of dollars that have gone out in consulting fees and contracts that you know, they could come across with $30,000 or $40,000 to put that stuff together.
Well, maybe if you're interested, maybe we can work together on that. And, if you could get back to whichever committee is handling this legislation at the time about whether we could put an effort like that together, I'd be interested in pursuing that. If I may proceed, Mr. Chairman, I'll keep this brief. I know there are a number of people here in the audience to speak to some of the concerns you had. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. Some of that language in the bill is fairly confusing, and I had to go back and review the statutes, but there is an express prohibition on the importation of smolts or eggs right there in the bill. So that's one of the concerns that we've addressed already, and maybe we can go through that and see if others haven't been already taken care of. In the letter that I made reference to a moment ago, Mr. Blake, and I certainly don't want to take this out of context, so stop me if I do, but on the last page of your letter, you make the statement, "While we don't feel that pen-reared will ever really displace our markets, we do already feel an impact, and will continue to feel that impact with or without Alaska being involved." Do you want to address that?
Well, that, to a great degree, my personal feeling. Pen-reared salmon are here. I mean, whether they're produced in Alaska or not, there's an impact on the wild fish market. It's already been felt. But what I was trying to stress there is that we're not going to totally lose our market. Wild Alaska salmon will always have a niche in the marketplace because of its superior quality, anything that's going to be produced in a pen. But I do personally believe that there's going to be an impact whether we have it in Alaska or not. And that's what I was referring to. I might add that on those, I've been trying to keep up with your amended versions and going through line changes, et cetera. This is off this version up there, this latest substitute for today. So. But I originally wrote this off the first bill and then changed it to first committee substitute, and so on.
And just finally, Mr. Blake, I don't want you to get me wrong. I'm not planning on going into the aquatic farming business. I have no hidden agenda here, and I sincerely, you know, the information that you provide to Representative Davidson, I'd like to see that as well, if you wouldn't mind, because I sincerely want to work out these concerns that you have, either here or in the Resources Committee. I think there's an understanding between the House and Senate that that's where we will have a long series of public hearings and compile information and deal with the biological issues as well as some of the issues that are hanging out here in terms of socioeconomic impact. But I don't want a polarization here. I hope you'll share your information with me and we can work together on some of these things, because I feel forces of inevitability here and market trends that are beyond our control. And I just want Alaskans to be competitive, for us to protect our existing resource. And, you know, if there are concerns about disease that I have not addressed by prohibiting the importation of eggs and smolt, there are, you know, just with pen-reared salmon, there may be some concerns you have beyond that. Let's talk about those and try and work it out as best we can. So I'll stop there and just hope we can work together on it.
Mr. Chairman? Yes. Yeah, Representative Ellis, unfortunately, I got called away Monday morning on an unscheduled trip to Cordova and just got back last night. I was supposed to set up a meeting with you at your office. I have one set up at 1 o'clock on Friday.
Great. Look forward to it.
Thank you. Did you have a question?
Yes,
Mr. Blake?
Thank you. Sorry to hold it back. Yes, I find the Prince William Sound Agriculture Corporation paper very informative and useful. I did read it. I read that. I think this committee, as Griffin and Ellis said, many of the issues that have been brought up will be discussed in Resources Committee because they have staff who have been following the fisheries and salmon question for a number of years. This committee interested in essentially in the commercial implications of and I know that 55% of the Prince William Sound fish come from the Aquaculture Association, and then and in Southeastern, the enhancement has not been that successful. The predicted return has not been there. I'm just also concerned about the structural, economic structural problem that the Aquaculture Association points out, that is the difference between the private nonprofits such as the Aquaculture Association and the possibility of multinationals coming in and dominating it as they have in the ocean processors and as we see in many of the industries that come here. I don't want to see a continuation of the sort of colonial situation that we have so much of our industry and even in fisheries as we had in territorial days with fish traps. However, it does seem that we have to come to grips with this technology in one form or another. And I'd like to see it possible, specifically for the fishermen or fishermen's cooperatives or for the Agriculture Association to undertake, for them to be the ones for them possibly to undertake experiments on the adaptability of their surplus stock to some sort of tender. Do you have any notion and any suggestions for restrictions on the type of corporations or restrictions on the kind of economic organization that would be allowed to, assuming that we can eventually go ahead and be allowed to engage in it so that we can make sure that the Alaska residents participate in the industry and reap the profits from it?
Well, we have talked about, at least in Prince William Sound Aquaculture Corporation, talked about at least the aspect of, you know, how do we control this? How do we try to keep it in individuals' hands rather than
for your
major corporations' hands? Right. It's very difficult without a real cost analysis of this thing. I see Alaska has done one. Since they're heavy-duty components of this bill, they would have a tendency to play it down, I would think, the actual cost that it take to develop a salmon farm. I see figures floating around here today that are about 50% of what I recall being told at the UFA board meeting when the Sea Alaska representative discussed the cost, but I would have to check that out with him. The problem with the structure of it is that at least on the best information that we have, that it's too darn expensive for individuals and mom and pops, if you will, to get into it. And when it goes beyond that, you know, we think we're defeating the purpose.
I'm disturbed by the British Columbia example, which nevertheless the Norwegian example does seem to have been an evolution from essentially mom and pop operations.
But it was also, you know, entirely subsidized by the Norwegian government to get it off the ground.
Well,
they spent a lot of money and a lot of years.
I mean,
well, that's true. One point, if I may bring up, and I really do hope that members of this committee, even after they pass this out, read some of the information. Number six in the UFA deals with funding, and you just might take a look at it. They are revolving loan funds that are not revolving. I mean, what is the state going to do? Now's the time before all that money's gone. I mean, that money comes back into the general fund and it disappears. It won't ever be put back.
We've just discussed that. I had a bill in the previous legislature, which I'm going to reintroduce or perhaps give the committee to reintroduce, which opens up AIDA to nonprofits and cooperatives. Unfortunately, Alaska Industrial Development Authority is restricted to profit-making corporations, and prohibited to loan to Fishermen's Cooperative and Agriculture Association, like, which I think is frankly a stupid restriction, and I would like to see it removed and be available in the same way that loans are generally. So there, we would be, I think this committee, although I expect we'll pass this out to resources that is interested in having hearings on the bill, and they do have the staff resources to deal with it. I think we are also interested in this committee in looking at the questions that have been raised and trying to open up things like the loan program, which would go beyond just this particular kind of thing, but open it up to the Agriculture Association.
Just one more point on the ADA thing. There are a lot of commercial fishing loans and now some of the enhancement loans that have been turned over to ADA, and that money does not come back to Channel 20. It goes into ADA. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really...
Then they don't loan it back to the fishermen.
No, then they don't loan it back to the fishermen. I mean, those loan funds initially were set up and were called intentionally revolving loan funds so that it's come a point in time, like now, where the state no longer had money to stick into those funds, they could be self-supporting and be a...
Position paper with numbers and information on that, because that would be an important backup to this loan.
Okay.
And finally, before you go, the Alaska Mariculture Association provided us with some figures on startup costs in the Bristol-based drift salmon fishery and other fisheries. Can you just take this and maybe when we get together, tell me if you agree, think these figures are realistic? And
I took a quick glance at it. They look pretty close as far as that part of it is concerned.
But it's just comparing startup costs in both industries, so we can talk about that.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. Is Mike Abbott? State your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mike Abbott. I'm the Projects Coordinator of the Research Development Council, a statewide organization made up of businesses, communities, labor unions, trade associations, and individuals dedicated to economic development, resource development around the state. We are a firm supporter of this legislation and of the concept of aquatic farming generally. Alaska doesn't often have the ability to initiate a new industry right now. It's a new idea for us. Most of the stuff we do in terms of economic development talks about enhancing existing industries. This is more of a creating role for the state, and it's a kind of a new one, and it's kind of exciting in the various aspects that the issue takes. Especially, we don't have this opportunity when it doesn't require an outlay of state capital in terms of loans or grants or subsidies. This is new to us. Almost every other industry that's been initiated has asked for some role of state capital or state loans or something like that at one point or another. In some cases reasonable, in some cases not. And yet this industry, the sea farming industry, it isn't making that request at this time. And I think that's an important note to make given the times that the state is in. On the other hand, and as a secondary point, we've got to also recognize that this industry exists in the world right now. It exists, it's flowering, it's growing every year, and there's no indication that it's going to slow down in any meaningful way internationally. And we've got to recognize that mariculturists are going to assume an important segment of the international fish product market. I mean, whether it be in Norway or Canada or elsewhere in the United States, which it's already is a rapidly growing industry, it's going to grow. And Alaska has the opportunity to get started in this industry right now. But you know, that we're not asking for the state to advance the mariculture industry. We're just asking for the state to allow it. All we want is the legal ability to allow for mariculture in Alaska. And right now, in many ways, that's limited, and that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for subsidies. We're not looking for the state to carry the banner for it or to market mariculture products or anything like that. We're just looking for the ability to make it happen, the ability to let it happen. It's an industry that will be driven by the market forces that are prevalent throughout the world. I know this bill has generated a lot of concerns. We've heard a lot of them today, and I'm sure they'll be heard throughout the legislative process and the Resources Committee and elsewhere. But we've got to recognize that the train is going to come. We can get on it, or we can get run over by it. It's a trite little statement, but it's entirely appropriate in this sense. And if there are concerns that can be mitigated through this legislation, we are more than happy to try to do that. But at the same time, we can't gut the concept and, you know, get half of us run over as opposed to the other half. I mean, we gotta get on this train. It's not going to happen otherwise. It's interesting that the opposition to this is coming basically from the traditional fishing industries we have it now. And yet this really, on most industries around the state, mining, oil and gas, etc., you don't have this kind of an opposition to new technologies or new forms of industrial activity. I mean, surface coal miners like Joe Usabelli and others don't argue when someone wants to start an underground coal mine. And we don't see oil company X objecting to another oil company getting access to a portion of land that everyone has access to. You don't see placer miners objecting to hard rock or load miners. And yet they're selling the same product. They're competing in the marketplace, but they're supportive. They're generally supportive because they recognize that Alaskan production enhances Alaskan production, whether it's in gold or oil or coal or timber or anything else. We need to enhance our industries generally, and we need to make sure that we all have that opportunity. And it's real important for us to note that and to take advantage of that when we're able to, as we are in this case. Alaska has all the things necessary to make mariculture happen. It's just a question of allowing the necessary statutory changes and allowing the marketplace to run its course. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll close and be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. And any questions from Mr. Quinn? Thank you. Roger Painter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Roger Painter, and I'm Executive Director of Alaska Mariculture Association. I'll just briefly summarize my testimony here. The Alaska Mariculture Association thinks there's two basic reasons this legislation should be passed. One is the potential for economic diversification and creation of new employment opportunities. And two is the need to strengthen the position of Alaska seafood products in world markets. While it is difficult to determine just how many economic benefits would be created by the development of this industry, some estimates have been developed for salmon farm. Using figures generated in a private economic feasibility study, the House Research Agency calculated that Alaska salmon farming industry producing 44 million pounds of product would have a total employment effect of about 1,920 jobs and a payroll of 48.89. Salmon farming industry of this size would have an economic impact roughly equal to the present logging industry and about double the resident payroll. I think that's important to keep in mind. It's also very important to realize these are year-round jobs. By nature, they'd be filled by residents. It's also significant to note that much of the employment will occur in rural Alaska where there are very few opportunities for year-round jobs. And many of the spin-off benefits from mariculture would occur in transportation hubs and service centers such as Anchorage. We believe there are many opportunities for commercial fishermen to become involved in salmon farming and other forms of mariculture. And I'd like to briefly read an example of this from the House Research Agency's report. The Prince Rupert Fishermen's Cooperative is a model of how a group of traditional North American fishermen can successfully integrate salmon farming into their operations to take advantage of new developments in seafood markets. Members will market their farm fish in the off-season to supplement their wild fish in-season. The cooperative produces smolts and fish food for its members and is experimenting with various types of shellfish for farming application. The combination of technical and research capability with managerial know-how and vertically integrated operations makes the cooperative an extremely powerful an adaptive economic unit. And the final point I'd like to make is that the Mariculture Association believes that the long-range stability of Alaska's most important seafood industry is directly related to our ability to take advantage of opportunities offered by mariculture. The global seafood situation is undergoing significant change And our ability to compete in markets will be determined by how effectively we'll be able to offer consumers what they want, fresh, high-quality seafood on a year-round basis. The situation may be best summarized by the House Research Report, which said, failure to invest in salmon farming could result in 1, a steady erosion of Alaska's market share in premium salmon markets, 2, underutilized processing facilities and corresponding loss of potential jobs, and 3, a private nonprofit hatchery system that may not be able to generate sufficient revenues under current operating constraints to repay its state loans and attain financial self-sufficiency. Alaska fishermen will face competition from farm salmon regardless of whether or not they come from farms in Alaska. There is a limited window of opportunity for Alaska to enter salmon farming and gain market share. And I think that's the basic thing that this committee needs to decide, is there good economic benefits from mariculture, and will there be any protections that we really offer commercial fishermen and markets for wild salmon by not approving salmon farming? And I'd suggest that 313 million pounds of farm salmon that's projected to be produced in the world by 1990 suggests those economic impacts are going to be there whether or not we decide to participate.
Thank you.